Want to look and feel better together? Team up and lose weight with Nutrisystem's Partner Plan. Partners lose more weight doing it together, up to 20% more weight than doing it on their own. Get fully prepared breakfasts, lunches, dinners, and snacks delivered right to your door. Delicious foods that are ready in minutes. Now featuring new Meals for Two. Double portion meals served up in one package and designed for weight loss. Quick to prepare and ready to share. Get Nutrisystem's Partner Plan and lose weight together. Now with Hearty Inspirations dinners that control hunger for up to 5 hours, exactly what you both need to feel full, satisfied, and energized as the weight comes off. Stop wasting money on diets that don't work and lose weight with Nutrisystem's Partner Plan. Get started for as low as $10 a day. Go to Nutrisystem.com/meals right now and get a deal for two. Just go to Nutrisystem.com/meals.
Expect to lose an average 1 to 2 pounds a week. Offer restrictions apply. See website for details.
For decades now, producers have been creating the music for lots of musicians and making it sound amazing. But did you know the dark underbelly of producing music? In today's episode, we're going to discuss two producers who are very bad humans and did dark, disturbing things.
This is going swimmingly.
Right?
For every happy song is a dark, dark story. You don't even know the half of it. That was terrible.
No, that was spot on.
Yeah.
In tonight's episode, we're going to tell you guys the true stories behind the songs that you love so much. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're going
to
do.
Yeah, that's it. That's what we're going to do. Welcome to Rock Candy.
Where we try to imitate other really bad true crime podcasts.
Yeah. But no one else.
We're just making fun of them.
No one else thinks they're bad. It's just us. I'm Maggie.
I'm Ashley.
And we're going to read you 5-star reviews first before we get going. Can't. I fucking can't. Stop reading me your 5-star reviews. I don't care. I don't care if somebody likes you. That's not going to make me like you.
It's incredibly pretentious.
Right?
Who does that?
Every celebrity podcast ever.
What psychos are doing this?
I don't know. Very popular podcasts do it. Because they need the attention. We are going on a rant. It's been a week.
Well, celebrities have nothing better to do right now than to start a podcast. So.
And take away from like indie podcasts. Hey, you know what? If there's anything I want anybody to take away from this episode, it's going to be listen to indie podcasts.
Like us.
Yeah. Or even just like any of our friends or anybody else on our network. Like, listen to a podcast by people who are doing this because they love it and are trying to be good at it.
Not because they have hundreds and thousands of dollars to keep them afloat for the rest of their lives and they have nothing else to do right now.
And hundreds of thousands of followers on their Instagram.
Yeah.
Also, like, don't go to a celebrity's OnlyFans. Like, actually go to a real human who has been, like, doing OnlyFans for, like, a year or two and are really putting effort into it.
And can really use the money. And that's why they're doing it. So.
Sorry. Disney stars don't need the money.
No.
So, you know what? I'm mad. I'm starting off mad. I'm sick of rich people. I'm sick of celebrities. And I feel like this really ties into at least my story and probably yours because I'm sick of rich people.
Yeah, it kind of does, I guess. Yeah,
eat the rich.
Yeah.
If there's anything I want you to get from this, guys.
And then barf them up and set them on fire.
Ooh, can you set fire to vomit?
Sure. You can set fire to anything with lighter fluid.
Fair enough. Yes, we are bringing you our classic patented true crime in music episode. Because, you know,
that's
not done.
It's October.
But it is October.
Yeah.
And we like talking about spooky things.
And you know
what?
We still like true crime. So, you know what? Fuck it.
But I think we're just going to mostly get mad in this episode.
Yeah. Isn't that every episode?
And I don't know if it's like a man thing and a woman thing, but I feel like at least with women in true crime, we spend most of the time just getting really angry. Because either you're fucking it up and you're like, dude, you could get caught. You got caught because you were dumb. Or you're like, you're a piece of shit and you should have never been born.
Yeah.
That's been, I've been really on that kick of like, I hate you.
I've had it.
Officially. And to get us even angrier, because we definitely needed more alcohol in our bodies, we are drinking Awestruck Cider.
Yeah, Hometown Homicider.
Hometown Homicider.
It's a pumpkin cider, and it's actually really good.
It is really good. You're getting me back into ciders.
Most of the stuff that I've had from them has been too sweet.
Oh.
Because even, like, a little bit of sweetness, I just don't like.
Right. But I feel like this, it's sweet, but it's not sweater sweet.
I think it tricks you into thinking that it's sweet because it's a little pumpkin spicy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not super spice.
Mm-mm.
It's pretty good.
It's more pumpkin than spice, which is the right way to do that.
It's a nice fall time cider.
Mm. It does make me feel like
you can make a nice mulled cider with that.
Oh, shit. It's mulled cider season.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize how easy it was to make mulled cider till last night. And
you
I was like,
literally put it in a saucepan and
toss
heat it
in
up.
Spices.
Toss in spice.
Let profit.
Profit.
Yeah, there you go. And it's delicious. So what we need you kids to do is make yourself some mulled cider,
mm-hmm.
kick your feet up, and then get prepared to get angry and throw the footstool that you put your feet on.
And then throw the mug of mulled cider and then be like, oh, fuck, that was the last mug of cider. Now I have to make more and I want to get up.
Yeah, and then just keep listening.
And then just be like, oh, fine. I'm burnt out.
we are guys, it's been a weekend.
We had a very fun weekend, but like I kind of just want to plant myself on my couch with some mulled cider.
Do we want to jump into this?
Yep.
Some spoopy stories.
Yep.
All right, let's go. All
right, I won the coin toss, so I'm going first.
Toin toss.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you the story of Lawrence Horn.
Lawrence Horn.
If you don't know who he is, there's a really good podcast called Hitman that I got a lot of information from.
Oh.
It's good. Like, it's not the best. I stopped listening before it was done.
Oh.
But I got all the information I needed. It was okay.
It's one of those podcasts where, like, you can listen to it. Like, I have a bunch of podcasts like that where I listen to the meat and usually I'll throw out the crust of the bread.
Yeah. They kind of jump all over the place a little bit, so it's not super in order, but it's fine.
That's weird. Who would ever do that?
I don't know.
Weird tangents in the middle of things? That's bizarre. I don't know about that.
Can't follow the information? I don't know.
Maybe
we should read some 5-star reviews, because it's totally not us.
It's not us.
Okay. Lawrence Horn, for all intents and purposes, was a pioneer. We'll give him that.
Okay.
He revolutionized Motown and was a big factor in its success. But we all know how hard the mighty fall, and Lawrence Horn fell the farthest.
Ooh.
And the hardest.
Because, like, there's some bad people in Motown.
Yeah.
Looking at you, Joe Jackson. Is that his name? The Jackson 5's dad was Joe, right?
Yeah, it was Joe.
Yeah, fuck him.
Yeah, fucking weirdo. This is why we can't have nice things, Joe.
Yeah, looking at you, Joe Jackson.
Lawrence Horn started his career in music pretty humbly as a DJ on the World War II aircraft carrier USS Lake Champlain.
Oh.
Don't be confused, he was not in World War II.
But did he live on Lake Champlain?
No.
Well, now I'm just confused.
That's just the name of the boat. The boat was named after Lake Champlain.
Fine.
But it's an aircraft carrier. It doesn't fit in Lake Champlain.
Oh, that's fair.
They should have named it Champ. Why didn't you name
Champy.
It Champ? Anyway, at only 24 years old, he got a job as a sound engineer at Motown Records in Detroit. And this was the early 60s when Motown was the hottest ticket anywhere. He saw himself working with great musicians like Marvin Gaye and the Supremes, and often collaborated with legendary songwriter and producer Berry Gordy. Lawrence was so good at sound engineering that he oversaw the mixes of almost all the Motown songs released from 1964 to 1967.
Wow.
His techniques were unprecedented in a time when a 4-track analog tape recorder was the height of technology.
Analog.
Oh, Hannah, your log.
Sorry, I needed that. I needed to lighten up the mood for true crime.
Yeah. He would basically take 3 tracks and layer them on top of each other to create a lush sound that came to be called the Sound of Young America.
Oh.
He left Motown in 1968 to join Holland Dozier Holland, a former Motown songwriting team that was caught up in a royalties court battle with Motown. Allegedly, Lawrence was fired from Motown for secretly recording sessions and giving them to Holland Dozier Holland.
I keep thinking you're going to say Holland Oates. But also, so wait. So was he giving them recordings?
Allegedly.
Hmm.
I don't know.
All right. None of us really know.
We don't. Anyway, that's not the crime.
No, that's not.
That is definitely not the crime.
This is so much. This is lighthearted.
And we're all done.
We figured it out. He was giving them samples. And we're done.
Back to you, Maggie.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk about murder.
Whether he actually did that or not, he joined HDH and had a bright career throughout the 70s. He was making bank, too. As a key member of recording these insanely popular songs, he was raking in the cash and creating a pretty posh lifestyle for himself. Fancy cars, mansions, private jets to New York, expensive dinners. He had it all.
Like, the minute he got money, he's like, I'm going to spend all of this. Why would I save it or invest?
Yeah, why bother?
Right? Like,
just fucking spend it.
I'm always going to be making a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had a great woman at his side, too. He met Mildred Marie in 1972 on a first-class flight to Los Angeles.
Well, that's where you meet the ladies.
She was a flight attendant.
Ooh, first-class flight attendant.
The couple married only a year later in August 1973, and by 74, their family grew by one when their daughter Tiffany was born.
So everything's coming up his way.
Everything's coming up, Larry.
All right, great. End of story.
But Lawrence's grand life wouldn't last forever. Only 6 years after they married, Mildred and Lawrence grew apart and separated in 1979. Though they were estranged and eventually filed for divorce in 1981, they still continued civil communication because of their daughter, Tiffany.
Like you do.
Their divorce was long and drawn out and was full of ups and downs. During one particular upside, Mildred found out that she was pregnant with twins.
Oh, with his twins.
His twins.
So there was a little bit more than civil conversation in regards to the more like civil boning. You know what I'm saying? We're going to fuck, but we're only doing this civilly.
Yeah. We're going to have straight faces. No smiling.
Oh, yeah. No enjoyment of this fucking.
No. Tamiel and Trevor were born on August 8th, 1984, 12 weeks premature.
Oof.
While Tamiel was a healthy baby, Trevor had underdeveloped lungs and suffered from various other medical issues, and so was disabled because of it. And things were made worse a year later when an accident left Trevor in even worse condition.
Oh no.
While at Children's Hospital in Washington, I think it's Washington, D.C., because that's where they lived, I guess. I don't know. While at Children's Hospital in Washington, receiving treatment for his already problematic disabilities, a nurse failed to notice that a respirator tube had come dislodged, and Trevor was deprived of oxygen for 90 minutes, causing severe brain damage.
Oh my God!
Now he was paralyzed and a quadriplegic, blind and deaf, and now required round-the-clock care.
Holy shit! I hope they sued for a ton of money.
Well, we're getting there.
Oh no!
Meanwhile, Lawrence's life was going down the shitter. He and Mildred finalized their divorce in 1987, but continued battling over custody and visitation rights, even though, by everybody else's accounts, he did not give a shit about his kids.
Interesting.
He did not want anything to do with them.
So you might almost say it's a bizarre power move.
Yeah.
To look like he's a really good dad.
Yeah. Suddenly, he was faced with paying child support for 3 children, one of which required expensive medical care.
Well, it's a good thing he put a lot of money in investments. It's a good thing he saved all that money.
He left his job at HDH in 1983 and went back to Motown, following the company to Los Angeles when they uprooted from Detroit. Because now, Well into the late 80s, Motown wasn't so hot anymore.
Mm.
The company moved to California to rekindle the magic of previous decades, but it wasn't working. And Lawrence's position at the company gradually lessened until he was merely a part-time tape librarian, barely making enough money to survive with $16,000 due in back child support.
Woof!
Yeah.
Woof. Wow. So...
And $16,000 was in late 80s money, which translates to like $29,000 today or something like that.
You know what? That's still a lot of debt. That's still not great.
That's a lot of child support you haven't been paying.
And also, like, yeah, that's a lot of child support. And you're also broke.
Yeah.
So, but doesn't Motown Records kind of have a resurgence with, like, I thought, I could be wrong, but I thought bands like Boyz II Men were on Motown?
No, I don't believe so.
Huh. I thought they kind of had, like, almost a resurgency kind of thing.
They just had a song called Motown Philly. Is that what you're thinking of?
I mean, I don't want to say yes, but maybe.
I mean, I don't think that they were on Motown Records. I don't even know if Motown existed at that point.
It probably didn't. I think I just thought Motown Philly. They were on Motown Records. It's fine.
It's back again. Well, that little East Coast swing. Okay. Meanwhile, in 1988, Mildred took up a malpractice suit against the hospital that caused her son's brain damage.
Good.
And actually, my notes are wrong. Both Mildred and Lawrence were in this malpractice suit.
Right. And that makes sense. Like, both parents.
Right.
Both deserve whatever comes out of that.
The Horns won, with $2.3 million going to a trust fund in Trevor's name, which he would only be able to access when he turned 18. But since Mildred was his guardian and parents, she was able to access it too.
Okay.
Plus, Mildred got over $322,000, and Lawrence received $125,000.
Okay. All right. That's... seems fair.
That is a nice chunk of change.
Right.
Mildred was prudent with the money. Her health insurance was paying for Trevor's 24-hour care and multitude of hospital stays and home health care workers.
Yo, what health care she got?
Right?
Who is she boning to get that deal?
I don't know. Blue Cross Blue Shield?
Is she a president? Is she a senator getting that free health care that they're all really against everybody else in America getting?
Some of that experimental... cocktails of drugs or something?
I mean, you know, I trust she's at least calling it the right name.
She would call it the right name.
Because she's a smart, independent woman.
Yeah. But because insurance companies are greedy liars, Trevor's quote-unquote lifetime coverage ran out, and Millie had to start paying for his medical care out of his settlement money. And Lawrence saw his own bank account dwindling. Despite receiving $125,000 from the settlement, it all went to paying off debts and child support.
Yeah, that's fair.
Then in 1990, he was fired from Motown.
Ugh.
Dude was broke and unemployed, but he had a really terrible and deadly plan to get that cash money.
Why don't you just get another job?
Nah.
I mean, you probably paid off most of your debts with that settlement money.
Yeah, but then you're just racking up debts again because you don't have any more money.
Yeah, I don't know. Get a job.
I don't know. Get a job. Maybe, you know, get a job. Or you could get a job.
You could also get a job.
You could get a job.
I mean, can't you get a job at, like, another record company?
However, this is also the Republican years. This is
Wait, Ashley, whatever do you mean?
This is, you know, those trickle-down economics.
Which totally worked.
It was just really working, and mm-hmm. He was just, like, standing there at the bottom, just, like, waiting for it to trickle down.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just have to keep waiting for it to trickle down.
Yeah.
And then everything just happens for you.
Right.
So you don't have to do anything.
Nope.
You just wait for it to trickle right on your face. Nice little line of trickle.
Don't worry. The Republicans are going to trickle all over your face. You just have to sit and wait for it. That's why you need to keep voting for them.
Yeah, I mean... it's just going to take, like, a while to work, you know? I mean, this shit takes, like, you know, 50 years
or so. Oh, so we're 10 years away from it, is what you're telling me. Yeah. We have to wait 10 more years, and we're going to get trickled all over our
faces. We would only have to wait 10 years if it weren't for those commie libtards in between those great Republican presidents.
So now we got to wait like another 30 years?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. So wait 30 years.
All right, Larry.
Just consistently vote for Republicans.
Yeah.
And their trickle-down economics. And 30 years from now, man, our buckets are going to be full.
So, Larry, you just sit there and wait. It's coming to you.
We're going to have buckets full of trickle.
Yeah. Trickle it's coming buckets. Hard.
Trickle buckets.
Trickle buckets.
Anyway, now that that rant is over.
Yeah, let's go back to murder.
At 2 a.m. on March 3rd, 1993,
3393,
Lawrence's ex-wife, Millie, or Mildred, their son Trevor, and Trevor's overnight nurse Janice Saunders were all killed in Millie's family home in Silver Spring, Maryland.
Holy shit.
Millie was shot in the right eye and twice by her chin, and Janice was also shot in her right eye.
What the fuck?
Trevor, however, was smothered to death. His respirator was unplugged, but since it was only for supplemental oxygen, he didn't rely on it. He didn't die right away.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So the killer put a hand over his tracheostoma and another over his mouth until he passed. And suffered. He smothered him to death.
Honestly, you are better off just shooting him because he can't see. He can't hear. He has no fucking idea what's going on.
He has no idea what's going on.
He just knows he's dying.
Yeah.
Kill him. Just kill him so he has no idea that he's even dying.
Yeah. I don't think this guy really gave a shit.
Oh, probably not. You don't say. Yeah. Weird.
The only reason the other daughters, Tiffany and Tamiella, weren't also killed was because they weren't in the house at the time.
Mm.
Tiffany was away at school at Howard University, and Tamiella was staying with Millie's sister Vivian only a few houses down the street.
Now, at this point, how old were the twins?
So 8 years old.
Trevor? He's fucking 8.
Yeah.
So you didn't shoot him because you wanted to be merciful?
I don't know. I think they thought that if they just unplugged the respirator, he would just die from lack of oxygen.
Mm.
And I think they thought that would happen almost immediately.
Right.
But then they're like, oh, he's still breathing on his own. What do I do? Okay, I guess I'll just smother him because he's a kid and he shouldn't be shot to death.
Which I always think is weird because I think...
Is it strangling somebody more
painful, like, and more, it's scarier, it's more because intimate. You see it's happening.
It's more intimate because you're doing it with your hands. You're up close to them.
Yeah.
Like, he could have stood far away and just shot, you know?
But I mean, it's like you're killing a kid, so at this point, what's your method?
Yeah.
Like, why is your method really all that? Just shoot them.
Yeah, and...
So they don't have to suffer or be scared.
The forensics showed that... The killer shot Mildred and the caretaker,
mm-hmm.
like, at point-blank range.
Jesus.
So, you can shoot a woman in the face at point-blank range three times, but...
Actually, you know what? Then that makes sense that you could just strangle a child and look at it and be like, I'm murdering a child.
Yeah, I guess.
This is great for me.
Vivian, Mildred's sister, found the bodies about 5 hours later. And it was a gruesome scene.
Ugh.
The house was ransacked, and the .22 caliber murder weapon was found in pieces strewn across the yard.
I feel like that's a dumb way to leave it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the logic here was, well, if I break it apart, then they'll never find it.
You couldn't go, like, I don't know, into the next town and throw it out at, like, a Wendy's dumpster?
Or at least, like, toss it in a sewer grate or something?
Anything. Yeah.
Anything would have been better than that. But yeah. At first, the police thought it was a robbery gone very wrong. But once they did a little digging, things didn't seem so cut and dry.
Mm.
Turns out, if Millie and Trevor both died, Lawrence would be set to inherit the remaining $1.7 million from Trevor's trust fund. That's pretty tempting for a guy whose girlfriend is paying his rent.
Okay, yeah, I guess.
Wouldn't you know it, in 1992, he became friends with a guy from Detroit named James Perry. James was a street preacher and hustler and all-around sketchy guy, and he was the perfect candidate for a hitman.
How can you be a street preacher?
You just stand and then, on the street and scream at people about God.
And then murder people.
Because crazy?
It's almost like religious people tend to be hypocrites.
And a little bit overzealous about stuff?
Weird.
Lawrence hired James to do the deed, advising him to buy a book called Hitman, a technical manual for independent contractors, which totally sounds like a carpentry book.
Yeah, actually.
The book, written under the pseudonym Rex Farrell, was intended to be a manual for prospective contract killers. However, it was rumored to have been written by a divorced mom that read too many crime novels.
Also believable. I would say more believable.
Yeah.
She would know better.
Yeah, if that's yeah. her favorite pastime.
Right.
James Perry read the book, took the job, and committed the nefarious deed.
Jesus.
He broke into the house and, catching Mildred by surprise, shot her at the bottom of the stairs in her nightgown, which is just like undignified.
Yeah. Dude.
Janice was shot dead in a rocking chair with her sewing still in her hands. Ugh. The pool of her blood was so large it soaked through the floorboards. And Trevor rested in his bed full of stuffed animals.
Ugh.
While his family was being murdered, Lawrence was at his apartment in L.A. enjoying an evening at home with his girlfriend. Ugh. And how do we know this? Because he conveniently taped himself enjoying an evening at home with his girlfriend.
What?
He made sure to zoom in on the flashing date and time on the TV screen, then stepped in front of the camera to make sure his face was fully on the video. It was blatant that he did that to be like, hey, see, cops, see, I was here on this date. I was totally home. It wasn't me. It's like,
that's the dumbest shit I've ever heard.
He's never done that before. Why would you do it now?
Because you're an idiot.
Yeah. You trying to prove your innocence just proved that you are guilty in some way.
Yeah. I feel like our stories are going to have a lot of similarities. Yeah.
Ain't that some shit?
That is some shit. It's almost like the balls on Brett. Like, look at the balls on Brett over here.
Yeah.
He's like, if I do this, no one will ever know.
Such a good plan.
Even though it's so fucking blatant what you're doing.
Nobody's
Anyone
ever
can read
know.
Through that. But okay.
And since Lawrence had an alibi, the police embarked on a massive investigation to find out who would do such a gruesome crime. Eventually, they landed on James Perry, but they didn't understand why a man from Detroit would come to Maryland to murder two women and a child and then leave. And that's when their suspicions about Lawrence grew, especially after he immediately took up a court case to receive the million-plus bucks he claimed he had a right to. And Millie's sisters fought him in court, claiming he was an unfit father and never cared about his children and didn't have a right to the money. And you know what? They ain't wrong.
They ain't wrong.
And Lawrence would never see the money. And in late July 1994, both he and James Perry were arrested. They were charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of conspiracy. Only 3 months later, James was convicted of all 3 murders and was sentenced to death.
Whoa.
Yeah. Lawrence was also found guilty of all 3 murders and conspiracy in 1996, but was sentenced to life imprisonment. And he died in jail in February 2017.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess he was old enough.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, he was probably born in the 40s.
He must have, well, if he was a World War II radio guy, he must have been born in the 30s.
He was not in World War II. He was just on a World War II airline carrier.
Oh, you know what?
That's why I said in the beginning he was not in World War II.
I just thought, like, you were saying he didn't fight in the war.
No, he was not in the war at all.
But Boys to Men were on Motown Records because of Motown Philly, oh my right? God,
no.
I'm not smart.
Don't play brain games with me right now. I'm not up for it. Millie's family filed a lawsuit against Paladin Press, the company that published Hitman, saying the company was basically an accomplice to the murders. They were irresponsible in publishing something like that.
Yes.
Much like the publishing company that published Anarchist Cookbook,
yes,
was also kind of complicit in a lot of the crimes that were, you know, committed because of information people got from that book.
Yeah. I always just feel like that's a slippery slope.
It is. It very much is. Yeah. It was settled out of court in 1999 with Paladin agreeing to discontinue sales of the book and pay thousands to the family.
I mean, I'm definitely down with them being like, yeah, you know what? Not going to make this book anymore.
Yeah, don't do it.
Yeah, that's a slippery slope. I don't love it.
Yeah, there was a whole documentary about the Anarchist Cookbook also. Yeah,
I feel like I must have watched it, but it's on Netflix. In my life, I don't remember anything.
Yeah, but basically, Anarchist Cookbook inspired a lot of very bad things. And
Didn't it inspire the Unabomber?
I think it inspired the Unabomber and Timothy McVeigh.
Right.
But eventually the author came out and was like, yeah, I totally do not stand by any of it anymore, and it's terrible.
He just wrote it as a kid.
Yeah, he was like...
And he was just dumb kid. He was
like in his late teens, maybe early 20s, and he was just like, yeah, this is really cool, but, you know, I don't really believe any of it.
Right, he never did any of that.
Yeah, not at all. But then all of these crazy radical nihilist anarchists were like, no, I'm taking this to heart and I'm doing everything it says because all of it's true.
So what you're saying is we can't have nice things.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm pretty sure that this is the running theme.
Oh, okay.
Today is we At can't least, have nice things.
Well, I think that's for yours for sure. And you know what's really weird is with Larry, I'm like, oh, should have fucking done it, you piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like, go fuck yourself. Are you serious? Get a job. But also the system is fucked up, right? Because it totally sets you up to never be able to come ahead.
Yeah. And also, this was a black man who got a lot of money and a lot of attention very early in his life, who didn't come from a whole lot and all of a sudden had too much.
Right. And no one's probably pulled him aside and said, slow your roll.
Yeah, like
put some of that shit in like investments.
This is how you have to manage it. You can't just blow your wad every 5 minutes and have no money in 10 years.
At least make a retirement fund.
Right. So nobody did that for him. Nobody, like Barry Gordy, didn't sit him down and be like, "This is all gonna go away someday. You need to plan."
Right. Or just even, I don't know. It sucks to lose your job, but I assume also, too, if you play the game right, you could just get a job at a different record label. Or, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know why you didn't play the game a little better.
I don't think that he was not a Barry Gordy. He was not a Quincy Jones. He was not one of those people who could make a name for themselves in one genre and easily transition it to a new genre.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know he had a job at some point, like fixing computers.
Yeah.
It was just like a crappy, you know, job over at Dave's TV fixing, you know, old tube TVs and computers and shit. But like, I don't think he ever really tried to keep up with new technology when it came to recording.
Nah, man,
stuff like
you gotta
that.
Be smart. You gotta like stay on that game.
And he also made the mistake of staying with Motown way beyond Motown's staying.
Yeah, like staying the writing was on the wall, and he was like, "I'll just see how
like,
this turns out."
It's like this ship is sinking, and he's like, "No, I'm just gonna chill here and, you know, see if it writes itself.
It'll be fine. This is fine."
Yeah, but he didn't, I don't know why, but he just didn't go somewhere else. You could have gone somewhere else if you are a sound engineer and you like computers and stuff that much.
But you know what? At the end of the day, you know what the real lesson is? Don't fuck your woman that you're separated from.
Yeah, don't.
And if
do
you're
that.
Gonna, wrap it up, bitch. Like, there is no reason for you to be having unprotected sex with someone that you're pretty sure you're gonna divorce.
Yeah. I also think that he may have had some like mental health issues that went unchecked.
Oh.
And also it sounds like his and Mildred's relationship was pretty bipolar.
Wow.
Like, they would have really good highs and really low lows.
That sucks.
And it continued after they decided to separate. And that's how she ended up pregnant, because they were on a really good streak. But, yeah, I think the relationship was very bad and probably toxic. And I think he had mental health issues that went unaddressed.
Man.
So, there was a lot of factors that went into this bullshit. And also, he seemed very, like, disaffected by his family. He showed no interest in his children.
That's, yeah.
At all. And he was kind of resentful towards Trevor, because after Trevor was born, mm-hmm. everybody was giving him attention and taking attention away from Larry.
But
so,
he's basically
disabled. He's incredibly disabled.
He's
and
unable
can't fend
to ever
for himself.
Care for himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so, fine. Like, he's not getting attention for a reason you would ever want to get attention, Larry.
Right. So don't be jealous of your 8-year-old son.
So wait, the guy who was sentenced to death, was he executed?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, he was sentenced to death, like, what, 30 years ago? So
he could have just died in jail, too.
He could have.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
That's what happens half the time, anyway. Either way, fuck that guy. Like, Larry shouldn't have. And then, like, the street preach, this is all fucked up and none of it makes sense. And you're almost like, I almost want to, like, understand and feel bad for you because the system's bullshit.
Yeah.
But then it's like, but you know what? Still not the answer to fucking kill your ex-wife and child and
there
random
is no
person.
Excuse for doing that.
Zero. Zilch.
Yeah.
Absolutely none.
Unless it was 100% completely genuinely an accident.
Which
it really isn't. No. Ever. Really.
No.
Hiring
a hitman is not accidental.
Yeah. But I mean, I would recommend listening to the podcast Hitman if you're interested in it. But I think my problem with it is that it comes at it not looking at the murders as the big, you know, to do in the whole story. They think that the lawsuit with Paladin Press is the big deal. And it's like, no.
No.
I think we're talking about, like, 3 innocent people getting murdered here.
Yeah.
I'm gonna focus on that. Also, cool. Fuck off.
Yeah, like, also fuck off. You know what? He got exactly what he deserved.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Now for yours.
No, I have a story. We're bringing it around. I'm bringing myself full circle.
This is a fun one. With lots of crazy wigs. I'm so excited.
Crazy wigs. I don't go into the wigs as much as I probably should have, but here
that's
we
okay.
Are.
We can go off on a tangent about it.
About wigs. Oh yeah. No. But I think there will be a lot of correlations.
Okay.
Between here. So allow me to set the scene. On February 3rd, 2003, very early in the morning, we're talking 4 a.m., Phil Spector walked out of his mansion, which he referred to as the Pyrenees Castle.
Why?
Because he's an asshole.
What does that have to do with anything?
That's, like, not the point.
But, like, is it full of Great Pyrenees dogs? Because then I'd be into it.
Yeah, it's not. Oh. And I think that's really his biggest mistake.
That's a huge mistake.
He's got wigs that look like Great Pyrenees,
I mean,
though.
We all know that Phil Spector is Joe Bluthing all over the place. He's making huge mistakes.
But he doesn't realize it.
He's oblivious to his huge mistakes.
Yeah, he is. Anyways, he comes out of his home. Gun in hand, he looks at his driver and simply says, I think I've just killed someone.
Is his driver just sitting out there? Like,
yes.
Because it's Phil Spector.
Imagine being Phil Spector's driver.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's a 24/7 job.
That's a 24/7, like, why am I doing this?
It's a 24/7 questioning my existence.
That's exhausting.
Yeah.
In its own
24/7 existential crisis.
Yeah. That sounds about right. The victim was an actress named Lana Clarkson, known for her role in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. She was also known for B movies like Barbarian Queen and TV appearances on shows like Knight Rider and Wings.
Wings?
I love Wings.
Love Wings.
Love Wings. You guys don't know Wings? She was 40 and working on a comeback when she was murdered by Spector. Many argued Lana was washed up, her career had gone stale, and she didn't become the star she aimed to be. And I will admit, she did have this always a bridesmaid, never a bride kind of situation going. Mm-hmm. she was getting small roles here and there, but never.
It doesn't sound like it was anything like a major.
I feel like she was always like, could see like that fruit that she wanted to grab, but just barely couldn't reach it.
Yeah.
That's what her career seems like to me. And maybe because, though, she was very much typecast as the busty babe, you know, kind of shuts up and just walks around and looks hot.
Yeah.
But she really wanted to play the funny girl and was always striving for more comedic work.
Mm-hmm.
And women aren't allowed to be funny.
Well.
Unless they're fat.
The rest of her life would not be a barrel of laughs.
No, I mean, the fact that she even had to meet Phil Spector.
Yeah. But yeah, only fat ladies are allowed to be funny. Guys.
Yes. Guys. The closest she could get to scratching either itch was her work in B-movies. Many came to adore her in these low-budget fantasy films. As her career slowed down, she would supplement her income by running her own website, where she sold autographed photos. So she learned with the times and learned how to run websites.
Huh.
Unlike Larry, who was like, I don't want to learn new technology. When the early aughts approached, she began to work on a stand-up comedy act and created a showcase reel titled Lana Unleashed. She also got herself a job as a hostess at the renowned House of Blues in L.A.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Was that before they became a chain?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't know how these things work. It's L.A. I don't know her. What's some real bullshit is there wasn't really any reason for Lana to be at Spector's place that night except to pacify his unreasonable ego.
Yeah, like, why was she there? She seems like a lovely lady, and he is quite psychotic, so.
Yeah. It is, I mean, I'll get to it, but it is hard to tell. She definitely, I think, had the idea of working at the House of Blues. They did see a lot of bigwigs. Ha! Pun intended.
We do talk about wigs.
Pun intended. But honestly, like, you know, a lot of the big names in Hollywood go there. So it's like, you know, she's a big hostess there and very pretty and personable and hoping, like, somebody might recognize her and she can talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a bit of a, you know, this is going to help, but she's playing the game.
Right.
You know, and that's smart. And she's good at it. You know, she seems like a person who was just really good to have at that place.
Yeah.
She's gorgeous. She's funny. She's nice. So, yeah. All right. Work it, girl. So, obviously, I'm talking about Phil Spector, the guy that we talked about in the Ramones episodes.
Yeah.
And I had alluded that he is banana nutcakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I did mention that he murdered this woman.
Yeah.
And I just felt it would be apropos to finally just come full circle with it. And, like, here's the story of murder on the murder episode. Here we go. So Spector's night started as any of his other nights do. Crazy wigs and excessive amounts of alcohol.
Yikes.
Fucking that boy loved himself some Manischewitz.
Oh, no.
Remember that Concord grape wine we had yesterday?
Oh, I know.
Yeah, he would have loved that.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. He just loved his guns, his wigs, his Manischewitz wine.
Were his lips always purple?
Yes. Oh, wait. I mean, I can't imagine they wouldn't be.
I'm picturing him with his giant wig and just, like, cracked, chapped lips with the line of purple on the inside.
But I also take offense to that because I definitely have had nights like that. I might have been like that yesterday where it's, like, just purple mouth.
Yeah.
Grape mouth. He got graped in the mouth.
It's like you're just making out with a little tube of concentrated grape juice.
Oh, Welch's is gonna sue you. He went out for dinner and drinks with a friend just for a few hours. It was just earlier in the evening. And after they went home, he went out with another friend for more drinks.
Oh.
And this was kind of like later in the night.
Oh. You have early drinks, you have late drinks.
Exactly. He's like, oh, it's like 6 or 7. We're going to have the early drinks and the dinner.
These are my early bird drinks.
Yes. And then at 9 o'clock, I'm going to meet up with my other friend. And then we're going to have some more drinks.
Mm.
So eventually, he lands at the House of Blues for, yes, what else? More booze. Because it's pretty easy to assume at this point that Phil is relatively crunked.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care how much Manischewitz, like, eventually you will get there.
He is that guy that goes into the tasting room and says, oh, I really like this dessert wine.
Oh, that's syrup, sir. Sir, that's just Concord grape jelly.
Sir, you're drinking Concord grape jelly mixed with grenadine. Can you please give this back to me?
Oh my god.
Yuck. His hangover barfs are going to be tie-dye.
It was around midnight when he began to walk into a more private area of the club that was really allowed for, like, just special people.
Mm.
And when...
It's just for people with weird wigs.
No, people with weird wigs, not allowed. But on the way in, he and his friend were stopped by the hostess working the private party.
Was she the wig police?
She was like, wee-oo-wee-oo, that wig is unacceptable. What are you doing? You're going to wig
jail.
That
wig is out of this world. Get out.
Oh my god, I wish. Well, so hold on to your hat.
Hold on to your wig.
Of course, the person who stopped him was Lana.
Uh-huh.
She said, ma'am, you aren't allowed
ma'am.
In here. She
ma'am.
Didn't. She didn't recognize who Phil was. Because he was wearing a wacky wig, and he's like 5'5", maybe. And so he's just a bit effeminate looking right now.
Yeah, he's skinny.
He's so short and skinny, and he's wearing a crazy long wig.
He basically looks like Andy Warhol in an even more ridiculous wig.
He looks like Andy Warhol's sister, Mandy Warhol.
Mandy Warhol.
Yes. Just Andy Warhol's sister, Mandy. The management quickly corrected Lana on her mistake and told her to treat him like royalty. So then Phil got himself into the club and spent a few hours enjoying drinks. So Lana gets off work around 1 a.m. And by then, Phil's buddy left because they were like, I'm an adult and it's 1 a.m. and I have to be an adult tomorrow.
Also, my friend is crazy and I want to go home.
Like, they probably are sitting there like, all right, if I bring him to the House of Blues, it's dark. I can lose him really quick and just say, hey, I gotta bounce. Oh, God, got a page.
I got to take a leak so hard. Okay, I'll be right back. Bye.
Runs out in front of the driver and like, please don't tell him
I'll
left.
I'll call you later. No, it's okay. Bye.
Bye. I love nugs. So for some bizarre reason, he insisted that Lana join him for a drink. Now, I'm not sure if this is like a power play on his part, but there are staff who do say she did oblige. She sat down, had a drink with him, but they did say like she wasn't super happy about it or super comfortable with it. It just
happened.
And I think there's just this air of Phil Spector that makes you feel like you kind of have to do what he says. Yeah. I mean, it might be the guns he totes around, but also I just think he just, for what it's worth, like... Home Dog does, like, have this air of confidence.
Undeserved confidence, honestly.
They probably had a drink, maybe two drinks, and they kind of leave not too long after that and go back to his place. So it's probably around, like, I'd say, like, maybe 2 a.m.
Did he get her there by saying, how's about a little bit of friendly gunplay?
Oh, my God, I love friendly gunplay. I hope you have Concord's Well, it's great fucking jelly for me to chug by the goddamn jarful.
You want to see all my guns?
I do, and I want to drink jelly while we do it.
Well, let's go to my mansion. I got guns and wigs to sell ya.
I mean, like, hold on. You're making him sound way more delightful of a human than he really is.
Trying to make him sound psycho. I guess I'm not doing a good job.
I don't know, because I kind of want to hang out with him. Maybe not for the gunpoint part, but like the wig part.
I don't know. I'm kind of, I guess I'm way too much channeling Tom Cruise in, what's that, Jerry Maguire?
Oh, yeah. I've never seen that.
I'm just going to flip out.
So when they get into the car, she tells the driver, Adriano De Souza, that this is going to be quick. She only intends to share one drink, then she's going to go home. And so he remembers, like, yeah, no, she just wanted to have a drink and go. She wasn't, like, super about it, but she was obliging and being, I think there was, like, a politeness and probably some, I'm going to play the game, all right.
Yeah, I could make connections from this guy.
Yeah. I mean, that's the gross thing about Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
Especially for women. Got to play the game.
Yeah.
So the driver waits in his car while the two go inside, and it's about a couple hours later that Phil comes out and tells him of the incident. The driver didn't call 911 right away, but Phil's agent, Michelle Blaine, And after that, he calls the police because I think he was like, I don't know what to do. And she's like, call the police, dumbass, but also like keep Phil under wraps until the police get there. So when the police arrived, Phil was in his house pacing around like a fucking maniac.
Mm-hmm.
And the police find the body of Lana slumped over a fake Louis XIV chair, a clear gunshot wound to the head.
Yeah.
The police arrest Phil on suspicion of murder and posted $1 million bond, which, hooray for rich dudes, he easily paid off.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's, like, running around saying, oh my god, but she, like, killed herself. I can't help it if she kills herself. And they're just like,
because nah. That makes total fucking sense.
Nah,
right?
Bro, we're gonna bring you in, because first of all, you're manic and hammered.
Yeah.
Like, he was his-ammered.
Yeah.
And they're like, nah, dude.
His mugshot
is
legendary.
Oh my god. Take a hot second. Just Google Phil Spector mugshot.
Oh. One of the best.
My god. They made him take his wig off for it.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Because you know what? He's simply the best.
He's simply the worst. He is the fucking worst, though. So there's a large media frenzy around this whole event, but none more so than with the trial. Phil made this an opportunity to be a spectacle.
Oh, yes.
Because it's Phil Spector.
Spectacle?
Spectacle. He made it a Phil Spectacle. He came in with a hot young wife, a deluge of bodyguards, and the wildest wigs you have ever seen.
Wait, he was married?
Yeah, he married some 26-year-old chick who I think thought, oh, if I marry Phil Spector right now, that's going to be really good for my career.
Oh, no.
And then Phil Spector went off and like, nah, I'm going to murder someone, though.
You stay here, honey. I'm going to go murder.
Actually, I do believe they got married after the murder, which might be worse.
Yeah.
So just so I can show you some of the brilliant wigs of Phil Spector, he comes in with this like blonde page boy wig.
That's like Princess Diana.
Yeah, but like ugly. Like he wishes it
like
was Princess Diana.
Bad Princess Diana.
Yeah. So
my favorite is this one.
Oh, yeah. So one of the best is just this weird fro wig that he wears for a while. And it seems to keep getting bigger every time he is in court.
It looks like a cross between Bride of Frankenstein and Young Einstein.
But in all the worst ways.
Yeah. This is not a good thing.
Again, if you can just go ahead and Google Phil Spector trial wigs, you're welcome, first of all. But yeah, I mean, like, he has, like, blatantly terrible fucking
some
wigs.
Some of them are real Bon Jovi.
I think that some
one's,
of them.
That one was Richie Sambora, like,
I think
to
he wishes it was Richie Sambora.
That's what I'm saying. That's what he was going for. I didn't say he nailed it.
Oh, you're right. You're right. But so I think it was at this wig. I don't remember exactly which wig it was, but I think it was at the fro wig where it got like just massive, where the judge said, it was either the judge or his lawyer was like, you gotta stop wearing these. Like, he was demanded to no longer wear crazy fucking wigs.
I remember that.
Like, they said, nope.
Yeah.
Pump the fucking brakes. Your wigs, we're done with them.
Yeah. I remember that hitting the news like, he's in the middle of a murder trial, but all the headlines were, judge tells Phil Spector to stop wearing ridiculous wigs.
And everybody's like, he murdered someone.
Yeah. Did we forget? He killed somebody.
But maybe, too, he was like, I don't want these wigs to bring him joy. So good for you, judge. For what it's worth, the judge was not taking any bullshit.
Yeah.
So good for you. He hired O.J. Simpson attorney Robert Shapiro to represent him on the defense.
Oh my god, John Travolta.
Is that the John Travolta one?
Yeah.
I thought he was the other one.
Nope, John Travolta was Robert Shapiro.
Robert Shapiro.
Yeah, with the eyebrows.
So, the defense goes to task. They went to work providing Phil's innocence by doing what else but blaming the victim.
Of course.
Ba-da-da-da. Welcome to blaming the victim.
White man's defense forever.
Yeah. So his story about what happened, like I said before, was that Lana killed herself. He said she found one of his guns, put it in her mouth, and killed herself.
Yeah, just found a gun and was like, I'm going to kill myself now.
Yep. This woman, who has never been to his home, never met this dude.
Had no idea that he had guns, probably.
Yeah, because she didn't know who the fuck he was. She
right.
was like, oh, it's a woman. Philippa Spectora.
That's a very adorable Harry Potter character.
Oh, it is. Make that happen in fan fiction. Thank you. Anyway, yeah, it tells the driver, like, yo, this is going to be quick. Like, why would you kill yourself with a gunshot, like a gun in the mouth? Also, guns are pretty much, like, very much not something that women use. That yeah, is no. not a mode of suicide for women. Men, yes. Women, no.
Where exactly was she shot, anyway?
So, it literally was through the mouth. It was, the gun was in the mouth, and it went through the back of her head.
Huh.
Right.
That's a very strange way to kill somebody.
Yeah. Well, it's a very strange way to kill yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's a strange, like, if he did it, it's a very strange way to shoot somebody.
No, I think it makes sense. I'll paint a better picture and you'll be like, oh, never mind. This all makes sense.
Yeah.
The defense built the case that she was so depressed about how little she managed to do with her career that she discovered Spectre's penchant for guns and took this as a perfect opportunity to end it all.
Look at this terrible actress with her shitty career.
She's ugly, too.
She's ugly, and she hates herself. And
she gained weight.
And guess what? She saw a gun, and she just shot herself with
That's what women do, because they're crazy. God.
They're hysterical.
And they actually, what was really gross, is they did have a couple people come to a couple people who knew her to come to attest to her depression, because she was depressed. Like, she was bummed out. Like, yeah, you know what? She did feel worthless. She did feel like she wasn't doing what she was supposed to do.
Real depression, or was she just really bummed?
I think she was depressed. I mean, she was on some medications here and there. And, like, of course, but, like, I have fucking depression and I'm on medication. And if someone murdered me, I'd be mad as fuck if somebody was like, Maggie walked into their house and shot herself in the mouth. Because first of all, I am not shooting myself.
Right. If that ever happened to you, everyone, and somebody was like, nope, Maggie just went into this stranger's house, saw a gun, shot herself, I would be like, bullshit.
Yeah.
That is complete bullshit. That never happened. You need to investigate a murder.
Precisely. Jesus. Anyway, it's mad. Makes me mad. Anyway, yeah, everybody cites her failing career. And some had gone as far to say that she was in Spectre's home in an attempt to use his fame for her status. And there were also claims that she killed herself after having sex with Phil because she was so ashamed, which I want to be like, y'all, hold up.
That's the most logical explanation right
there. But also, like, damn, Phil, I would not use that because, like, what does that make you look like?
Yeah, but also they're already making her out to look like a shitty failed actress. So yeah. He can be a shitty failed sex partner.
Good. Yeah. He is, though. Like, I bet he's terrible.
Yeah.
I have no doubt he's the worst in bed. But actually, in the autopsy, they did check her for any signs of intercourse, willing or forced, and they found nothing. So there's pretty much, like, no chance she had any kind of sex with Phil.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he tried, and I'm sure she was like, nah, bro, I'm good. That's going to be a no from me, dog.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the prosecution decided to do a deep dive into Phil's history with guns and treating women like garbage.
Hmm.
All right. I get it. Everybody is probably sitting here expecting me to, like, Phil Spector, he made the Wall of Sound. Oh my God, he made such amazing, you know, bands happen, like the Ronettes, of course. And he worked with Ike and Tina Turner, and he worked with the Beatles and the Ramones, and he did all this amazing work, and George Harrison. And yes, yeah, Phil Spector did some amazing work. That doesn't make him okay to do this bullshit.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not going to celebrate his... I think plenty of people celebrate his goodness. I want to come in and show you what he's done to other musicians who also are very celebrated.
It's kind of funny because, like, I don't actually see a whole lot of people celebrating Phil Spector anymore.
Hmm.
I think if this murder trial... If he was just normal through the whole thing, if he didn't try and say that she killed herself, and if he didn't wear the ridiculous wigs and try to get all the attention, I think people would still be singing his praises.
Interesting.
But because he made a spectacle of himself, everyone can point a finger and laugh at him. and not take him so seriously anymore.
Which is depressing because even if you take away the wigs and the defense,
he still murdered someone.
And he's like, here, let me get into it because he's done some shit. In case you didn't listen to our Ramones episode, which, what are you doing? Those were great episodes.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, we tell you about how he basically held the Ramones by gunpoint, which, fuck you. I know Marky tries to downplay it. I 100% believe he held them by gunpoint.
Yeah, I don't care if he held them at gunpoint or was just, like, talking with his hands and had a gun in his hand.
That's still a fucking threat.
That is still a threat, and that is still fucking terrifying, and I would be out of there.
Well, and if you listen to other people talk about the way he held, like, saying that they felt like they were held at gunpoint, it's the same fucking thing, where, like, he has his gun, and, like, you're sure you want to leave? He doesn't have to point it at them. It's just they see a gun in his hand, and they're like, I don't want him to fucking shoot me.
Yeah.
So, 'cause
he's probably just waving it around all willy-nilly, like...
Marky probably just fell asleep on the fucking couch during, like, one of the movies or something and was like, oh, I woke up, I was fine, I didn't care.
Yeah.
Sorry, Marky, I like you, but I think you're wrong about downplaying what Phil Spector did. But he also did bullshit like this with other musicians, too. Like John Lennon, where he actually shot... So apparently he shot the gun off in the room when he was working with him. Yeah. Like, he had the gun, and he's yelling at John, and it accidentally goes off. And John, like, actually, like, plugs his ears, and he's like, Phil, if you're gonna kill me, just kill me, but don't fuck with my hearing. I need that. And I'm like, all right, John Lennon. Usually don't
always...
That is
one moment where I'm like, no, that's funny.
John Lennon and the bipolar disorder I have of my feelings for you. I'm gonna put that in the positive. That's kind of cute.
Yeah.
I feel like I appreciate that.
One check mark in the pro column.
Yeah. But he actually didn't keep it to just musicians he worked with. He also used them against women who either weren't succumbing to his advances, or even if they just weren't doing things exactly the way he told them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I saw clips of women testifying about, I mean, I would have done it just fine. He could have just been romantic, but he wanted to actually rape me. So he held me at gunpoint and made me have sex with him. But I wanted to have sex with him.
Is it kind of like if I threaten you with a gun, it makes the sex better?
Which, that's a fucking, fucking like, bold ass, like, signal for a fucking sociopath.
Yeah.
Fucking serial killer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But okay, you need the thrill to get off.
Yeah.
Which is gross. And then, like, but yeah, the way some women would say, like,
with this tiny little garlic knot of a dick.
Yeah, the tiniest little garlic knot of a dick. Yeah. Where he's like, look at my garlic knot dick. Take me seriously.
Let me dip it in your butter.
Mm. Ew.
That's disgusting.
Oh, God. Is that?
But I bet he would say something like that.
He probably would, because he's the worst. Yeah, and there were other women who would say, you know, they'd come out and, like, leave a room and go into another room, and he would stop them and be like, I told you to just take your fucking clothes off. Get back in the bed and do the thing. And it's like, he would use guns all the time. The prosecution had many women from Phil's life come in, testify about all this. Like I said, I heard some of the clips.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it on YouTube. He would basically just sexually assault them, emotionally abuse them. Even if they were like, but I like you and want to do things with you so you don't have to do, okay, you're just psychotic. Person who didn't testify but would probably know about all of this better than anyone would be his ex-wife Ronnie Bennett.
Mm.
Or, you know, the Ronettes.
Yeah,
Ronnie of the Ronettes. Say she is the Ronette. Their marriage was toxic in every way imaginable. I don't want to go too crazy deep into the shit show, but just a few things that this trash person did to Ronnie.
Mm-hmm.
Not long after they married, he actually dissolved the Ronettes, basically separating her from her friends and family.
Because mm-hmm.
they were like, all right, we're going to do more music. And he's like, no, we don't have to anymore. Bye. And he just, like, dragged Ronnie away.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. One day, he shows her a glass coffin that he purchased.
Okay.
It's like the one in Snow White.
Okay.
Totally see-through.
Uh-huh.
And he said he bought it for her. And that's where she would be if she ever tried to leave him.
Wow.
Yep. Also, one day she comes home and there's just twin boys in the yard. Like, they drove up to the yard or, like, the house together, and there's just twin boys up in the yard. And he's like, surprise.
Surprise, these are our children?
Yes. He got her twins as a surprise present.
That's not a present. That is a lifelong commitment that if you're not ready for, oh, it's going to suck.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just fucked too, because it's like, I think it must have felt a little bad to her. And I think, like, because she's a woman of color.
Yeah.
And Phil's white. He gets these two little white boys.
Oh, come on, dude.
Like, it's just like he's trying to change her in every way possible and make her a slave for him. He kept her prisoner in the Pyrenees castle for months until, with the help of her mother, she managed to escape the locked down barbed wire house and, like, got the fuck out. She wasn't even wearing shoes.
Jesus Christ.
But she managed to escape.
What happened to the kids?
I don't know. I think, I read little snippets here and there. I think they stayed with Phil for a while. I think they actually eventually accuse him of abuse years down the line.
Yeah.
Because, duh.
Of course.
Yup.
I believe it.
So back to the trial, though. Mm-hmm. So at the end of it all, to really just bring this whole thing home,
mm-hmm.
the prosecution brings out his driver, Adriano de Souza.
Mm-hmm.
And they had him testify about what he saw that night. Because he was the only person who was with him from beginning to end, he could paint a clear picture. He drove him to his dates with friends. He drove him to the House of Blues. He came out and saw Phil with the gun and saying, I think I killed somebody.
It's so funny that, like, the driver is always kind of key to all of these murder trials.
Oh, of course. The staff is always like, yeah, I know what happened.
We see everything. You just ignore us, but we see everything.
We know what you did.
Yeah.
Of course, the defense tried to say that Adriano's English was very poor, which it wasn't. And he misunderstood what Phil said, which he didn't.
These fucking women and these foreigners, they don't know what they're talking about.
Right. They're like, he didn't understand properly. He didn't say he thinks he killed someone. He said he thought someone was dead.
You know, haul off and kill themselves and don't know English.
Yeah. And it's like,
how dare they?
The driver can come out and say, nah, I was with him all night. He was fucking toasted. Lana was a little tipsy, but didn't want to stay. He came out covered in blood. So, and here's the thing, too. So he comes out with this gun.
Uh-huh.
And the forensics were really weird in this. Like, he comes out with a gun in his hand. Lana's hands were covered in gunpowder.
Okay.
And then Phil's were not.
Okay.
Phil didn't have any blood on him, but also she got shot in the mouth. Uh-huh. You wouldn't really have a lot of spit back from the mouth. It's all going to go out the back of the head because of the way the trajectory works.
Right.
And so, like, they were, like, forensics was a big battle. But, like, likely what happened is he stuck the gun in her mouth and had her hold it.
Yeah.
Or, like,
this is going to look like you killed yourself.
Yeah, like, he basically probably had the gun. She's probably scared. Had her hold the gun like she's going to kill herself and then pulls the trigger.
Uh-huh.
So that's why there is a smidge of gunpowder on his hands. But, like, there's a ton on Lana's.
Yeah.
It's just the forensics are so fucking weird in this. So at the end of all of this, the jury deliberates for 12 days.
Wow.
When they come back, they are deadlocked, 10 to 2, making it a hung jury. So what I've heard in different interviews and articles is that it sounds like the foreman. Yeah, right? The foreman is the guy in the jury who's like the head juror.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't understand precisely what reasonable doubt was. He seemed like he was like, well, there's no evidence that he did it, so there's reasonable doubt.
No, that's not how that works.
Yeah, they hired an idiot to be a juror.
And how then I guess, did he become the foreman?
Because, well, and that was the thing, too. And then there was one guy who went with him just because, like, well, he's the foreman, so he knows what's right.
No, that's not how this works.
There was whispers that some people on the jury were bought.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the money. So a year later in 2008, there was a new trial. This one focused a lot on forensics, again, with the defense claiming that there wasn't enough blood or gunpowder found on Spectre for him to have done it. And they focus a lot on this jacket that was found in his closet with a few spatters of Lana's blood, which why is it in the fucking closet?
Yeah, that's weird.
Right? But they find it in this closet, and they claimed that there's not enough blood spatter, though, for him to have been that close to her. But again, like, other forensic scientists are saying, no, because of how she was shot, she's not going to have a lot of blood coming right. from the front, it's all going to go out the back.
So if you're standing close to her,
you might not get all that much blood on you.
Right. But the particles that are coming at you, they're going to get on you.
Yeah.
Because you're that close.
And also, like, it did take them, like, I think it happened around, like, 4, and if they didn't get around there until around 5, like, he has some time to clean up, and he's pacing around, and he's acting manic, so he probably cleaned up a little.
Yeah, he probably changed his clothes probably 3 times.
Maybe, because he changed his wig at least 3 times. But the prosecution brought in more autopsy evidence that they came across, saying that there was bruising on Lana's tongue. One of the coroners found bruising on her tongue that would only happen if someone forced the barrel of a gun in her mouth.
There you go.
Like, you're not going to force a gun barrel into your mouth, but someone yeah. else is going to shove it into yes. your mouth. So the way her bruising was like, nah, someone else had to have shoved that into her mouth.
Right.
So once again, the jury deliberates, and this time around, they finally found him guilty. Spectre tried everything he could, from money to hiring 4 different lawyers. He didn't have his O.J. Simpson lawyer for long. He had 3 more after it. It was buh-fucking nanas. He hired, like, a guy who worked with mobsters in New York. He hired this chick that he had a weird relationship with, which apparently that Phil Spector movie with Al Pacino and, or is it Robert De Niro? I don't know. I always confuse them. And Helen Mirren, and they're in it, and, like, HBO had it. I don't know.
I don't know. Apparently, but I feel like Al Pacino looks more like Phil Spector.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, that's based on their weird relationship, and then, like, some other dude.
Weird.
But he had to hire so many fucking lawyers because it never worked. And also, he had all the wigs money could buy, and he just tried to paint himself in the best light, but in the end, his garbage behavior finally fucking caught up to him, because at the end of the day, you keep playing with guns, it's gonna go off someday, and yeah. it's gonna fucking kill someone.
Yeah.
And that's what I think honestly happened. I don't think he intended to kill Lana. I think he wanted to scare her. I think he wanted her to fuck him.
Yeah.
I think he wanted to show power and, like, shoved a gun in her mouth, and it probably accidentally yeah. went off. Maybe it went off because she's trying to push it out and he's trying to push it in, and he fucking hits the trigger.
And that could be how she got the gunpowder on her hands.
Hand. Right? I mean, there's so many fucking... It's just... Like, look at the fucking behavior. Again.
Yeah.
It's just that same story of, if you keep letting someone behave badly, someone is going to get hurt and everything is going to be awful.
Yeah.
But everyone was like, well, that's just Phil.
No.
No.
That's not how it works.
At the end of the day, though, he was sentenced to 19 years to life in jail, which is where he will likely die, because he is still there.
I hope he does.
Me too.
Because dying in prison is anticlimactic.
And that's what he deserves. Truth. But yeah, again, more frustrating stories about
men just getting away with things,
or just men being like, if you think about it and you see bad behavior from someone, why not stop them? Have a conversation. Say, hey, raise a red flag. Maybe this way, like, you could prevent someone from getting murdered.
Yeah,
you could prevent someone from hiring a fucking hitman.
We should have a system like that episode of Black Mirror where you can rate people and it follows them around.
Oh, no.
But instead of doing a rating, you just do red flags.
Oh, no. Like, yo, red like, flag on this guy.
How many red flags does this person have? Is it enough to be like, okay, I can deal with that? Or is it like, oh, no, I'm not going near them?
Right. Because there are plenty of people, you know, who are like, they're just annoying, but they're harmless. Yeah. And then there's plenty of people you're like, I think they're an incel.
Yeah. We should make that app.
We should. No, we shouldn't. That's another slippery slope. No. I hate slippery slopes. Anyway, thanks guys for listening to our terrible, terrifying true crime episode.
Always fun to do.
Always fun to hear about how people are terrible.
Just the fucking worst.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening. Appreciate you. If you're digging what's going on, come visit our website, www.rockcandypodcast.com. And over there, you're going to find more episodes, and you can find all the links to our social medias. We got the Instagrams and the Facebooks and the Twitter, even though social media is toxic and terrible. But if you want to just, you know, like, even just email us and chat, we're down with that. You want to get away from politics? We're your people.
Yeah.
Except we will always complain about how we fucking hate rich people. There you go.
Yeah, and invite you to eat the rich at every single episode.
Yes, always eat the rich. Also, check out our network, Pantheon Podcast Network. Thank you guys for letting us be a part of the glass menagerie of music podcasts that we got going on there. So go check them out, because helping them helps us.
And you can also go on over to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/rockcandypodcast. And you can give us your money and we'll give you stuff in return.
Swag, swag.
Some swag and some bonus episodes every month.
Yeah. That's always fun.
And also, if you want to give us more money and get even cooler things in exchange.
Yeah. Oh, I think we have cool things.
All of our stuff is cool.
We are cool.
But this is cool stuff you can wear. You can always go to our merch store on Teespring. Just search for Rock Candy Podcast, and we have a whole bunch of clothings and stuff. You can get a hoodie. It's getting cold out there. It's getting a little chilly. Get a little hoodie.
Get yourself a hoodie. Get yourself a nice new face mask, because we got these for at least another year or two.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very comfortable. I like it.
Yeah, I need to fix mine.
Yeah, we'll get that.
I tried to fix it. It's still not big enough, because my face is fat.
And I have a child head. It's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, come back next week for more spoopy tales from October. We're going to brighten it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I'm sick of wanting to fucking just lay in my bed and die every day.
I'm sick of hating everything.
Right? We're
going
to have a little
fun. But also, I hate everything. So yeah. It's hard when that is just in your bones.
It's a real chicken or the egg situation, isn't it?
What came first, me or the hate?
Yeah. Yes.
It was all born in one.
You were born of this.
My soul and
afraid.
The hate are entwined forever.
Yes. That's fair. That's good. Anyways, come back next week. Maybe less hate. Maybe more fun.
Maybe some special guests.
Ooh, special guests. Someday. Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe.
Anyway, that'll be it for this week. But we'll see you guys next week. And until then, party on, Ashley.
Party on, Maggie.
And party on, you crazy kids out there.
Bye.
Fly on the wings of love. Fly, baby, fly.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.